Hello, this is Kathy Hart, host of the Health First Radio Show. Today we have some really interesting guests here for you. In the first half, we have Scott Bland, the mindset coach. And in the second half, we have Kate Stillman with her new book, Body Thrive. But first, here's Alan with the Health First News.
You now have an excuse to skip cutting the grass every weekend. It's beneficial for the bees. And mowing your lawn less often to provide native bees a better habitat won't lead to an increase in disease-carrying ticks, experts say. When research ecologist Susanna Lerman began urging friends and colleagues to leave lawns a bit longer to help the bees, the first thing people said was that letting the grass get longer would invite ticks, she recalled. She and Vince D'Amico, a fellow USDA Forest Service research entomologist, studied whether less frequent mowing of 16 residential lawns in Springfield, Massachusetts over two summers could benefit native bees without increasing the risk of ticks. The study was published online April 3rd in the journal PLOS-1. Moderate drinking could increase your risk of stroke, a new study says. Researchers followed more than 500,000 people in China for a decade. Overall, it found that alcohol boosts stroke risk by about one-third for every four additional drinks a day. It also found that moderate drinking, up to two drinks a day, increased the risk of stroke by about 10 or 15%, and also slightly raised the risk of high blood pressure. The researchers couldn't determine if moderate drinking might also increase the risk of heart attack, according to the study published online last week in The Lancet Medical Journal. The risks of using voice-based technology in your car may be greater than you think. Many consider this technology safer than using their hands to operate devices while driving, but it's not risk-free. The AAA Foundation for Traffic Safety warns. Mental distractions can last as long as 27 seconds after drivers use voice-assisted technology to dial, change music, or send a text message. At 25 miles per hour, a car travels the length of nearly three football fields during this short time. David Yang, the foundation's executive director, said in a news release, "Just because your eyes are on the road and hands are on the wheel does not mean you are focused on driving." The risk of a crash is up to four times higher for drivers who talk on a cell phone and up to eight times higher for those who text behind the wheel, the researchers said. If a few minutes of your time could save a person's life, would you do it? In a new study, researchers found that any type of bystander CPR, including just performing chest compressions, significantly improves the chances of survival for people who suffer an out-of-hospital cardiac arrest. Cardiac arrest is when your heart suddenly stops beating. Study first author Dr. Gabriel Riva said bystanders have an important role in out-of-hospital cardiac arrest. Their actions can be life-saving. He's a PhD student at the Karolinska Institute in Stockholm. The report was published online April 1st in the journal Circulation.
So we haven't had Scott Bland phone in yet. We're going to play a recording of Don Demure talking about the benefits of echinacea. We have Don Demure with us today. He's an educator, lecturer. He's been working with good old-fashioned herbal medicines for decades, and he's a wealth of information. So today we're going to talk about the folklore and efficacy of echinacea. Welcome, Don.
Oh, thanks, Kathy.
Nice to have you on the show again. So tell us, what exactly is echinacea, and what are the traditional folklore uses for it?
Yeah, echinacea is the Latin name for purple coneflower. It's usually around, we usually go with the English common name, but in this particular case, the Latin name became popularized. So we're referring to this plant by its Latin name, so echinacea purpurea or pallida or Augusta pilea. There's so many different subsets or subtypes, if you will. So the purple coneflower, it's indigenous to the prairies, more so on the American side of the border. We do see it growing in Manitoba, Saskatchewan, so on, but mainly in the warmer climates of the prairies. And like I mentioned, the three species that really stand out as being medicinal, so that would be purpurea, Augustophilia, and pallida. There's many other varieties that people will use in their garden just for its aesthetic effects. But as far as medicine goes, we're really concerned with those three varieties. And so as far as historical uses go, it really goes back to the Native Americans. They're the first people to work with this herb. And they use it for everything from snake bites to cough to fever, and also infections, particularly sepsis, where there's a systemic infection in the blood, which can be fatal. So, and shortly after that, we saw the Europeans coming over to Americas, and they interacted with the natives, and they saw that this plant was truly medicinal. It was largely safe, and it had a wide array of uses. And again, back then, they used it for a whole host of different things, including cough, trauma to the body, like lacerations and whatnot, it would help to contain the infection.
Mm-hmm. Dawn, do you know if how the natives used it? Did they use the root or did they use the purple coneflower part? How did they prepare it?
Yeah, that's a very good question. And that's a discussion that keeps, you know, going on and on. Depends on who you're speaking with. But the natives, to our knowledge, the perfect example, actually, let's say a person was hunting or walking through a field, a forest, where there was a snake. They didn't see it. The snake bites the victim. And so what would happen is the victim would lay down. He would not, or he or she would not move. One of his friends would go looking for echinacea. They would pick it, bring it back to the victim, and they would put the flower and the petals into the victim's mouth. He or she would chew and salivate, swallow the juice and the saliva, and then they would take the resulting mash out of the mouth and apply it to the site of the bite where there's going to be bacteria, there's going to be venom. And interestingly enough, the outcome was quite positive. So the Europeans saw this, and so when they started investigating this, they found compounds in echinacea that seemed to inhibit either viruses or bacteria or even snake venom from getting a foothold into the body and creating a systemic infection. It would help to localize the injury, if that makes any sense.
Yeah. Well, absolutely. That's a really great description of what they do. But I think they also would cut the wound, and then the person who found them would suck on it and spit everything that they could out to get as much out as they could before they put the echinacea poultice on. So good old time herbal medicine was really, you had to be tough to take it sometimes.
Exactly.
Yeah. But the echinacea has been very powerful for centuries. And Alfred Vogel, who he's passed away now, but he worked a lot with the Sioux Native American tribe.
Yeah, the story goes like this. Not too many white people were allowed on Sioux land just because of the acrimony between the U.S. Army and the Sioux. Many of the tribes, they got decimated, as you know. And so they're very leery of white people approaching them and coming onto the land. Alfred Vogel knew this. Somehow he got the message through to Ben Black Elk, the native elder, that he's from a different country. He's from a different part of the world. He's from Switzerland, a peace-loving country, never known to invade any other country or group of people. And he also was able to explain to these people that he's a healer, much like Ben Black Elk. So after a while, he got an invitation. He was able to enter their land, and he met Ben Black Elk. They became good friends over time. And he saw firsthand how the natives would use the echinacea, and he saw that it's a truly miraculous herb. It's very, very safe. It's very efficacious, and it's got quite a broad range of applications. In Canada, we're limited in what we can say about it, but traditionally, it was used in many different instances. It was quite interesting that way.
Mm-hmm. And some of the old research, like it became very popular to take echinacea about 25 years ago. And just everybody took it all the time for colds, flus, because it was really, right, we were riding a wave and everybody learned how to say echinacea. At that time, they were suggesting that maybe it wasn't so good for autoimmune problems, that because it would bolster the immune system. Has there been a change in thought with the research?
Yeah, well, here in Canada, we're allowed, A. Vogel as a company, we're allowed to make the claim that it's good for prevention and treatment of upper respiratory tract infections. In fact, interestingly, it's the only natural or even pharmaceutical product where we can say it's for both prevention and treatment. Now, it gets a little tenuous when we get into autoimmune disorders. The thinking with Health Canada is that anything that strengthens the immune system could hypothetically exasperate symptoms of an autoimmune disorder. So we know with autoimmune, there's certain inflammatory cytokines, namely tumor necrosis factor alpha, which is always on. It's always elevated, and it's basically immune system waging war with itself. It's not a good situation at all. And knowing that echinacea strengthens the immune system, theoretically, it would make sense to avoid echinacea under these circumstances. But Vogel's done research over in Europe, here as well in Vancouver at University of British Columbia, where they found that echinacea has a modulating effect on the immune system. So hence, if let's say a person has a weak immune system, it will, in a very subtle manner, help to strengthen the person's immune system over a period of time. If a person has a very strong immune system, it really doesn't do a whole lot. It just basically puts their body, their immune system on autopilot, if you will. And for a person with autoimmune disorder, we actually found that the echinacea has a down-regulating effect, basically pushing it down back within the normal range. However, it hasn't been validated with human trials, so we have to stick with, you know, within the legal confines, and we just apply this to respiratory tract infections in people who do not have autoimmune disorders.
Okay. And is it safe to take all winter as a preventative, or do we just take it when we get extra tired or feel a cold or flu coming on?
Yeah, that's a very good question. A lot of science to back us on this one. We did a huge trial in England, University of Cardiff, with a huge number of test subjects, 744 to be specific, and it was double-blind, placebo-controlled. And through that study, we learned that if you are a high-risk person, meaning you smoke, you don't sleep very well, you're high stress, or you just seem to have this genetic predisposition to getting sick all the time, it just happens. Some people, my daughter, for example, she seems to catch three or four colds a year. That those people are in the high-risk group, and those people are well-advised to take small amounts of echinacea from fall till spring. And it shouldn't really go much beyond 4 months, because that trial that we did in England, it was a four-month trial, and we saw that it was perfectly safe period of time. But so we are bound by law. Obviously, Health Canada sets a limit to our claim. So if you are a high-risk person, you know you get sick quite often. You know you're out interacting with the public, or you fly on airplanes, which I consider a high-risk thing, with all that air that's recirculated. And so if you're one of these people, then yes, take a small amount, let's say 30 drops of liquid, one or two of the tablets once a day. And if you do feel symptoms, let's say a scratchy throat, you feel this overall malaise, then you'd be well advised to take several doses throughout the day.
Okay. And there's so many different ways to take echinacea. You talked about a liquid or tablets. How are those made, and how do you decide which one's for you?
Well, I could speak to the Vogel approach. Everything that Vogel makes is a fresh tincture. So when the echinacea is picked, typically happens first thing in the morning when the active ingredients are at the highest. So basically, within 2 hours, it's soaking in ethanol, which is alcohol. And ethanol seems to be a really good menstruum or vehicle for extracting all the active ingredients. So basically, it's a mother tincture at this point after it's been soaking for 2 or 3 days. And if it's destined to be a solid format, such as a tablet, all they do is evaporate the water and the alcohol, and they take that gloop, if you will, and mix it with various excipients and turn it into a tablet. So basically, the tablet has the same fresh characteristics as the tincture. Tincture is really good for people who are concerned about absorption. When you take a tincture into your mouth, it gets absorbed immediately right through the membranes in your mouth, and it goes to work immediately. Now, if you're always traveling like myself, I prefer the tablets. I just find it's more convenient. But the attributes, the efficacy is going to be pretty much identical.
Okay, Don, we're going to have to go to a quick break. And when we come back, we're going to learn more about echinacea and how to pick a good one.